Welcome to Deconstructing Conventional, a show that's unafraid to challenge the status quo. We are eager to question our assumptions, to find wrong turns in our thinking, and take on controversial topics. This show is brought to you by True Whole Human, a coaching business that helps clients find the first principles that lead to better health and better living. I'm your host, Christian Elliott. I'll do my best to stay curious and humble. You do the same, and we're both bound to learn something. Welcome to the show. Prepare to have your thinking stretched. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 29. I've got another fascinating episode for you today. I guess you could say serendipitously, it worked out that I have two episodes in a row about the eyes. So if you missed my last interview about how to heal your eyesight naturally, go back and check out my interview with Carlos Moreno. But this one is all about iridology, which is a discipline that analyzes the eyes. It's really a window into not just our physical health, but possible nutrient deficiencies, and interestingly, our emotional health and our past traumas. It can also give us insights into our overall constitution and underlying susceptibilities we might have. So my guest in this episode is a man named Jordan Gunderson. In addition to being an iridologist, he is a master herbalist, and you may recognize him from previous episodes. So this show was particularly fun for me because after we talked about the history and method of iridology, Jordan and I looked at pictures of my eyes and his eyes. And for context, we hadn't talked about my pictures yet, so you get to hear me in real time learning about what my eyes have to say about me. So since it's an audio format, we really did our best to describe what we were looking at. But if you want to watch us analyze the pictures, this interview will also be featured as part of our upcoming and free detox course. The course is designed to help people who have taken the COVID vaccine and want to detox from that, but it's really turned into a course about how to detox and heal from pretty much anything. And humbly, I think this course is really a much-needed reality check and first principle-based approach to really cut through the noise and the hype and the hopium that's full of inflated promises and kind of help steer you away from the unhelpful or modestly helpful options and point you toward the most needle-moving things you can do. So I think this course is going to just be a game changer and a statement on the topic of detoxification. So anyway, if you want access to the course, where you can also watch this interview and many other of the interviews, then just make sure you're signed up for our newsletter. To subscribe, just go to the footer of our website, truewholehuman.com, and you'll be among the first to know when the course is ready. One final thing I'll say for context is that this show is something that over the years I've kind of realized that the body has so many insightful and non-invasive ways of giving us information about what we're dealing with. And frankly, I think many of them are more profound and actionable than a lot of the lab tests that you'll get at a typical doctor's office. So stay tuned for more interviews in this vein of things that the body can tell us about what's going on internally that don't involve lab tests. And know that I'll keep bringing you new ways to take charge of your health. Okay, so without further ado, enjoy my conversation with Jordan Gunderson. All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's episode. My guest is Mr. Jordan Gunderson. He has the distinguished honor of being the first guest to appear three times on the show. If you haven't heard our first couple of interviews, we did one on kind of just herbs 101, and we did another one on an herbalist's perspective on how to detox from the COVID shot. So today we are talking all about iridology and the idea that your eyes can be a window into so many things related to your health. So Jordan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me back on. It's good to be here.
Cool. All right. Well, give the listener a little bit about your background and what got you into studying iridology in the first place. And what is iridology?
Yeah. So I think, you know, with most people, it's a little bit of a journey. You get a piece here, you get a piece there, and then it all kind of starts to come together. And that's kind of how it was for me. I first got into herbs and learning about how to take care of our bodies, how to detox. And then once I started doing that, I was helping my family, but we noticed that for my youngest daughter, she was 2 years old at the time, she had some serious issues that we couldn't quite figure out. We didn't know why she was having these issues. The same herbs that worked for me and for the other members of my family, they weren't really working for her. And just to give you a taste of the things she was experiencing, whenever she would get sick, she would stay sick much longer than anybody else in our family.
Hmm.
And she would, once she would get well, she would continue to have this chronic cough that wouldn't go away. And being the herbalist that I was going, okay, well, I know what to do here. We're just going to do this and that. And it wasn't working. And so I had studied herbalism with the School of Natural Healing, which was started by Dr. John Christopher. And he had used iridology a little bit in his practice back in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. So I had heard of iridology before, but I didn't really know much about it, what it was. And so as I was thinking about how to help my daughter, I just had this thought come to me one day, you should go learn iridology. And that was seemingly random to me. I was going, I don't really know much about this, but sure, I'll look into it a little bit. And so I contacted the School of Natural Healing where I learned about herbs. And they actually forwarded me to a guy by the name of Dr. David Pesek. And he is the founder and president of the International Institute of Iridology.
Oh, you went right to the top of the food chain then, huh?
Yeah, he's one of the top iridologists in the world. He's presented at the really prestigious German Conference of Iridology. He's the only American to ever present there. And I'll talk a little bit about German iridology versus American iridology, because that's an interesting conversation in and of itself. But anyway, I went to his school and learned about iridology. And once I knew enough, I looked in my daughter's eyes and boom, I found the cause of her problems. And it was just incredible to be able to see that and understand it. And then with that knowledge, I knew how to best support her.
Well, it's fun to me because I've got a client who I had mentioned when we first did our interviews that you were also an iridologist. And so he's an initiative taker. He went and found an iridologist and got a workup done. And so at this point, I've been his coach for over 2 years. And so I've gotten to know him quite well. And many of the things in this report were like scary accurate to who he was. So not just like, you know, what's going on and what systems or organs need help, but the temperament and personality and nutrient deficiencies and so many things that were just right in front of me on this printout. And I'm thinking, how in the world did she figure this stuff out from his eyes? So before we get into some of the basic things that iridology can analyze, give us a little bit more of that, like a brief history of it. How far back does this discipline go?
That's a great question. It goes back to the beginning of human civilization, really. We have some evidence of iridology, or at least some form of iridology, being practiced in most ancient cultures. The Egyptians, the Chaldeans, the Chinese, the Greeks, the Romans, they all have some form. With the Egyptians specifically, they found hieroglyphics where there's an iris, and then there are organs placed inside that iris,
really?
Indicating the various areas of where you find those systems in the eye. Alexander the Great, his chief medical officer, would use iridology to determine which individuals were fit for combat. And they would only choose the strongest people to go be in the army. And that kind of makes sense, that you want the strongest, fittest people. And you can tell a strength of a person's body by how tight the fibers are in the eyes. So when they're really dense and really tight, that determines how strong a person's body is going to be, how well composed the cells are going to be, and things like that. And so that's how they would select their soldiers for battle.
Wow. Okay. So, well, give me some of, like, what are some of the basic tenets then of iridology? Like maybe the first principles, or what does it purport to be able to help us diagnose or learn about the body? You mentioned strength and things like that. What other things can it help us get insight into?
So that's an interesting question. And that kind of goes along with the history of iridology.
Okay.
Because, you know, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, they used to refer to it as iris diagnosis.
Huh.
There are many practitioners who refer to it as such. And so they would use the iris to help inform a diagnosis. Most places in the world today use iridology, or it's pretty prevalent. However, here in the United States, it's not. there's a good reason for that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to say a good reason, but there is a reason for that. There was a guy by the name of Henry Lindlar. He was an American naturopath. He was in the late 1800s, early 1900s. So he did a lot of natural medicine and things, and he's actually quoted as saying, "The regular school of medicine as a body has ignored and will ignore this science because it discloses the fallacy of their favorite theories and practices, and because it reveals unmistakable the dire results of chronic drug poisoning and ill-advised operations."
Oh, man. No wonder they didn't want that out.
Those are his words, not mine. And so with the coming of age of the modern pharmaceutical industry in the early 1900s, if you're familiar with the Flexner Report that went around to all the medical schools, and they seemingly picked on all the natural medical schools, iridology just kind of dropped out of the curriculum.
Yeah. For the listener, in case you don't know, in episode 2 of this podcast, I went and deconstructed a lot of that history. So if that's intriguing to you, go check that out. But anyway, carry on, Jordan.
And so that's kind of when iridology kind of went out of vogue in here in America. But it was kept alive by a naturopath named Dr. Bernard Jensen. If you're familiar with him, he was a natural healer. He was a chiropractor. He's considered to be the father of iridology in North America. He did all kinds of things with herbs and nutrition, and he's the one who kind of kept iridology alive. He was born in 1908, and he passed away in 2001.
Does he write a book about enzymes? Am I thinking of the right person? You know?
I think his big book was A Guide to Better Bowel Care. I think that's the title. Okay. I'm not sure if that's the exact title.
Anyway, I may be thinking of someone else. There's a great book, Enzymes, the Key to Health, and it so undersells the breadth of what he covers and by focusing so myopically on enzymes. But anyway, okay. I'm chasing a rabbit in my own head. Go ahead.
So Bernard Jensen kind of kept iridology alive. I think he learned from Henry Lindlar, and he kept it going. However, across the ocean, over in Germany, is actually where a lot of the really good stuff comes from. There were two guys. One was named Josef Deck. The other was named Joseph Ongerer. They were both German. And they actually have kind of basically the same story. They were drafted as medics in the Nazi army. And then they were both captured by the Russians during World War II. And while they were in Russia, they started working as medics with Russian soldiers. And they actually would observe these Russian soldiers, what was going on in their eyes, and they would correlate that with their medical history. So it was very observation-based. They were making connections, making correlations. And then after the war, they went back and basically did more research, did the same thing. They were very, very meticulous. I believe it was Josef Ongerer. He actually became a doctor and professor of medicine. And both of these men published a lot of information. I think Josef Deck looked at over 1 million eyes during his lifetime. So they were very, very detailed and very extensive in their research. But with these two differing schools of thought, with American iridology, it was a little more, how do I say this? More new aged in its beliefs. It was very kind of mystical. And the German school was very observation based, very scientific. We're not publishing anything that we can't correlate or replicate. And American iridology was a little bit more spiritualistic. Okay. It wasn't as grounded in observation, at least from what I have gathered. For example, there are a lot of things in American iridology that we have since learned are not accurate. One of the things was that if ever there you see a weakness in the iris, if it's a structural weakness, that it can heal up and it will close up and it will be good as new. But the Germans proved that's not actually true. With the advent of digital photography, we've also been able to show that as well. Huh. We get these really good big pictures of the iris, and you can take pictures over time, and the structure is not going to change. Now, what may change are the different colors in the iris. Basically, in iridology, there are three different types of iris colors. There is the blue iris, or what we call lymphatic. That can appear anywhere from gray to blue to green. Those would be considered lymphatic irises. Then we have the hematogenic or brown iris. Those are like the really matte, dark brown irises. And then we have the what we call biliary iris or mixed. Okay. That's kind of the light brown, hazel. It can be anywhere from light brown to more darker brown. And those are the three different types. Now, in American iridology, there was this longstanding belief that if you have brown eyes, that your eye color should actually be blue, and you need to do a lot of cleansing until your eyes turn blue.
Ooh, okay.
It means that you have lots of heavy metals, lots of toxins in your body. And so people would cleanse and cleanse and cleanse for years, and nothing would happen. And so that's one of the things that German iridologist said, no, that's not true. That's not a thing.
Hmm.
Now, I will say that everybody in the world does have blue eyes. That is a fact.
Okay, tell me more. How is that a fact?
Most people in the world have melanin pigment that covers the iris fibers. We call those iris fibers trabeculas. And so that melanin pigment gets deposited over the top of those trabeculas. And so I've done this with my clients who have brown eyes. Almost every single time I have a client who has brown eyes, we'll take a picture of them, we'll blow it up real big, and then there's often a few areas where you can see where that pigment didn't get deposited, and it's actually blue.
What? Okay.
I have a friend who's Pacific Islander, so he's got really dark brown eyes, and he wanted me to take pictures of his eyes, so I did. And we looked at it. We zoomed in. I said, look, your eyes are blue right there. And he was just like, what the heck? This is crazy. So, yeah, everybody in the world has blue eyes. But most people in the world, they appear brown because of that melanin pigment.
Okay. Well, so wild card, it's in my head. I've got a friend who actually has two different eye colors, like significantly different. What would you make of something like that?
Well, it depends on their parents. And grandparents as well, because oftentimes you'll get parent who has blue eyes, parent who has brown eyes, then they have a child. And most of the time that child's eyes will be kind of a mix of blue or brown. So it'll be kind of like a biliary iris that I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes though, it happens that for whatever reason in utero, that fetus can't really decide which. It's like the genetics are at war.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes they come out with a brown eye and a blue eye. That's very rare.
Mm-hmm.
There are other instances of what we call a sectoral heterochromia.
Okay.
Which is where there's a section of the iris that is brown while the rest of it is blue, or it's darker brown while the rest is lighter brown. So those things do happen. It's essentially just kind of where the body can't really decide what to make it.
Uh-huh.
And so it just kind of comes out.
Let's go for the compromise. Fine, we'll just do both.
Right.
Fascinating. Okay. Well, but that's a great history. There's plenty in there I did not know. And it adds more color to some of the other aspects of it. So I guess one of the most captivating things to me anyway about iridology is how holistic it is. That rather than trying to isolate symptoms, it's really, from my understanding, and you tighten me up here as I articulate this, but it's really trying to look at the body as this interconnected web, and it considers how various systems and organs are influencing one another. So it's fun for me because that's what I do as a coach. I'm looking at the complexity of this person's life, trying to figure out what is bringing about the health they do or don't have. And it's exciting for me to think that the eyes could be another window into understanding what the body's really dealing with. So did I frame that well? Is that kind of one of the tenets or approaches iridology has?
Yeah, that's absolutely spot on. I think iridology really excels when it's used in a holistic manner. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who try to use iridology like a doctor does, and they try to make diagnoses. And I don't think that's really a great way to do that, because you're looking at a whole person, just like you said. You're trying to interpret all these different things to come up with why a person feels the way they do and why they act the way they do. And a lot of times it's like this, it's a complicated web.
Mm-hmm.
And so oftentimes when I work with clients, one of the biggest hurdles that I have is trying to educate them in a way that's holistic when they're used to thinking very reductively,
yeah.
Like the medical system kind of trains us to think,
yeah.
I've got diabetes, I need insulin.
Right.
That's not the only thing. That's one of the things,
yeah.
But there's so many other factors involved. And so when I provide reports to people on their irises, one of the challenges is to help them interpret everything together. And it's kind of like drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah.
There's so much information in the irises. One, from a genetic perspective, all of the structural features in your iris are going to be genetic. So you have these, what we call trabeculas, like I mentioned, they're these fibers in your iris. If you go and look in the mirror and you see those lines like spokes, those are the trabeculas. And whenever you see an opening, they're called either lacunas, if they're more elliptical, if they're kind of like lines, like spokes, like kind of like they're depressed or deep,
mm-hmm.
Those are called radial furrows. And those indicate areas of genetic tissue weakness.
Huh.
So whatever you find, whenever you find those features in whatever area it's in, is going to determine if that area of the body is genetically weak. You also have things that show up in the iris that are more of an experiential perspective. So something that may have come about over time, something that may have developed. Those can be pigmentations, like, for example, a brown pigment in your iris is going to be liver and gallbladder indicated. It may be that your liver and gallbladder may have been congested at one point. It may still be. Orange pigment is going to be pancreatic related. It's a little more red. It's going to be digestive enzyme related. They're both pancreatic. There's orange and then there's reddish orange. Orange is going to be more blood sugar regulation problems. Reddish orange is going to be more digestive enzyme, pancreatic issues. And then we have yellow, which is going to be more kidney congestion, kidney stagnation, things like that. We also have kind of a whitish cloud feature that's called tophi, lymphatic tophi. That's an indication that the lymph system may be congested, may be stagnant, may have some issues with that. And then there are more less common features. For example, people with brown eyes often will have this, not so much people with blue eyes, but oftentimes you'll see little speckles. You can't really see it just looking in the mirror, but when you get a high-powered camera, you get these digital photographs, you can zoom in and find these little speckles all around the iris. And that is usually an indication that the person may have some challenges with iron metabolization. So for whatever reason, their body's not able to use the iron that their body receives.
Wow. Okay. Well, so in your, so I took your little, you have a 7-part series that you wrote on the world of iridology. And so one of the things, I quoted it because it stood out to me, it says, in the world of iridology, The eyes are like a living diary, faithfully recording the stories of our emotional journeys, which was not necessarily something I expected the eyes to reveal. But so tell us about that. Like, how do the eyes, in a sense, are they a window into the soul or beyond physical symptoms? How do the eyes help you understand somebody's emotional landscape, not just physical history?
That's a really good question. So like I mentioned, I went to the International Institute of Iridology, and the founder and president, David Pesek, he created his own kind of school of thought of iridology. It's called holistic iridology, interestingly enough. And he was a psychologist for years. He got his degree in psychology. And one of his big contributions to iridology was the thought and emotional aspect. There had been a lot of groundwork before him, but he kind of really brought this all together in a holistic way. And one of the things that he kind of teaches is that these various systems of the body, these various different types of signs, they all have emotional indicators. And let's take the liver, for example. The liver often indicates anger and resentment issues. So if you have a genetic weakness in the liver area of your iris, you may be predisposed to experiencing anger and resentment. If you have a liver pigment, let's say you have a liver pigment in your left iris, that may mean that at some point in your life, you experienced anger and resentment toward primary feminine figures in your life, whether that was mom, grandma, sister, spouse.
Interesting. You know, so even the left and right eye are going to give you different information.
Yeah.
Okay.
So right side is going to be masculine. Left side is going to be feminine.
Huh. Okay. Keep going. Any more on the emotional stuff? Because I'm super fascinated by how that the eyes are willing to give you that information if you know how to look.
Yeah. So for example, I had a client a little while ago who had on her left iris, I believe she had some pancreatic pigmentation and some liver pigmentation, but she didn't have that on the right side. And so as we were going through her report and I was talking to her about all these things, I said, it looks like you may have some anger and resentment towards primary feminine figures. And I do this very carefully because I don't want to say, you've got mom issues. Not a really great way to bring it up.
Uh-huh.
So I always let them do the talking. I kind of put it out there. So I said that. And then with the pancreas, the emotion associated with the pancreas is often grief and sadness. So I said, it appears that you might have some grief and sadness towards primary feminine figures. And she kind of sat there for a minute and she was like, yeah, I don't really have a great relationship with my mom. And it's really stressful for me. And she was kind of talking about that. And she was like, I don't know what to do about it. And I said, well, the best thing you can do is to have that talk with her, if that's an option. You know, if it's not safe to do that, I wouldn't say do that. Okay. And then we talked about all different kinds of things that she could do to help work through those emotions. And then about a week or two later, her mom came in to me and set up an appointment. And she was married, this woman. And so she didn't have the same last name. So when her mom came in, I didn't know who it was. And then I said, so how did you hear about me? And she said, oh, well, you told my daughter that she and I have some issues. And so I wanted to come in and find out what issues I have with some people in my life, what emotional issues I have. And so it actually was a really good conversation for her and her mom. They actually did end up having a really good conversation about some things from childhood, how she grew up. And so it was very healing for her to get through those things and work through them. Because a lot of times when you find out what's in your eye, you've never been able to work on them because you don't know what's there. Yeah. And so just the fact of meeting with someone like me and having them show you what's there, it puts it at the forefront of your mind and you can go, wow, I didn't even know these things were issues. It's like revealing yourself to you.
Yeah. Or what it sounds like is it might be revealing something that's much more relevant or weighty in terms of your body's burden, or it's what it can't quite get past in order to heal. And just by bringing awareness to a major element of, or this a big piece of the puzzle, sure enough, you can actually go at the thing that's most impactful in a healing journey rather than dance around it, try to supplement your way to health or any number of other silver bullets, when you can really identify the heart of the matter. I can imagine profound nature in, or a profound amount of healing that can take place in the identification of that. So fascinating.
Yeah. It's really interesting to know too, what you're genetically prone to.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you have a genetic weakness in the thyroid, mm-hmm. that's going to be something that you might struggle with your whole life. But if you know that, you can know how to support your body, right?
Right.
So things like, for the thyroid specifically, Brazil nuts. Brazil nuts have a lot of selenium that help your body uptake iodine. So getting on Brazil nuts, making sure you're eating lots of Brazil nuts. Not too many, though. Also, Dulse. Dulse is really great for iodine content. It's a natural source of iodine. Mm-hmm. And so that can help support your thyroid.
For people who don't know what Dulse is, tell them.
It's a type of seaweed, Northern Atlantic seaweed. It's purple. It's my favorite kind of seaweed. It tastes less fishy than some of the others in my
you can opinion. Can't you get that in like a shaker bottle? Like they make it into like a seasoning? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. A lot of people use it for culinary purposes. I think that's the biggest use. But Dulse is great. So knowing those things that you're predisposed to, you can know how to support your body. And really those, in my experience, those genetic weaknesses are only going to flare up, so to speak, mm-hmm. when your body's under a lot of stress. So whether it's mental stress, emotional stress, physical stress, that's when they'll act out because they are genetically weaker tissue. One interesting thing that I have seen is sometimes I'll see a weakness in the gallbladder area and I'll say, hey, it looks like you have a genetic weakness here in the gallbladder.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, about 7 times out of 10, they'll say, oh, I had my gallbladder removed.
I was going to ask that. And does it give you windows into past, like I'm thinking of surgical traumas the body's gone through, like that removing of a body part or some sort of, like whether it's ovaries or any number of things, I bet you that somehow.
We can't see removed tissue, but oftentimes when there's a genetic weakness there, they'll often have had it removed.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, you can sometimes see like really serious traumas.
Mm.
For example, if you've had any kind of spinal trauma, you can see that on the pupil. The pupil will often appear like flattened in certain areas, depending on which area of the spine.
Mm-hmm.
We call it an applanation of the pupil, where it looks a little bit flat in one area. So that is something we can't see. I did see one time my friend she wanted me to take some pictures of her family members, of all their irises. And so I did. And she had told me previously that her dad had a serious bowel trauma. His bowel had ruptured. And when I took a picture of his iris, she said, can you see that in his iris? And I went, I didn't think that was possible, but yeah, I see it right there. There was this brown pigment that was just coming right out of the bowel area, spilling out into the other areas of the iris.
Wow.
And I didn't think those kinds of things happened, but that appeared to be what had happened in his iris. So that was really fascinating. Those things don't happen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if it was traumatic enough mm-hmm. that it was recorded in the iris.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I want to transition a little bit and, I guess two part here. One is helping the listener get a sense of like, what exactly, when you go through an intake, are you doing a verbal intake of a written form first, or do you go straight to the eye and then debrief them afterward? And I ask that because As you know, I sent you some pictures of my eyes because I thought it might be an interesting thing to wrap into this episode. So we may be putting the cart before the horse here, but I'm fully prepared for him to tell me I look like a dad of six kids who might be a little underslept or stressed or any number of things. So hopefully I'm not going to be weeping in front of all of you while we're looking at a couple of pictures of my eyes here. But so one, tell me about the process, and then we'll, for the people who are in their detox course, you actually can watch this. If you're listening on the podcast, we'll try to be as descriptive as we can. But tell me about the process, and then we'll pull up my photos and see what insightful things you may have been able to find out about my eyes.
Yeah. So the process, usually people are coming to see me for something specific. They don't know what's wrong with them, but they know something is wrong.
Okay.
And they want some more information. Oftentimes, they know that I can help them with herbs, but they don't know necessarily what they need because they've got all these other problems.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're just kind of intrigued about iridology and they just want to do it.
Uh-huh.
And that's great. They usually learn a whole lot more than they ever thought they would. About their body. So when people come in, we usually just take pictures first. I go back and forth. Sometimes I like to get an intake, and other times I like to just go in blind and just start talking about what's in people's eyes, and they'll often corroborate what I'm saying. I'll say, oh, it looks like you tend towards a little more acidity issues. You may have an under-acidic stomach here. It looks like there may be some blood sugar regulation challenges, and they go, wow, yeah, that makes sense. So we'll take pictures and then we'll talk about it for a little bit. And then I will go and create a report for people, and then they'll come back and we'll do a follow-up and go through everything and kind of come up with a holistic plan that they can follow and start taking care of their body in a better way. So that's kind of the process for most people.
Okay, cool. Well, we're doing the eyes first because I haven't done any sort of verbal intake with Jordan yet. So you guys will get this is the first time I'm hearing whatever he's about to say too. So welcome into the client confidentiality room with us. So go ahead and pull those up if you will and give the list, give it to me straight. I can handle it. Just let me know what you're finding there and we'll have some fun with it.
Okay, let's see. Okay, there it is.
So these were actually shot on an iPhone, so they may not be the best pictures I could have sent him, but they're what I was able to do. So
yeah, it's a little bit hard when you've got just a phone camera. Let's see.
Normally people come into your office and you have a fancy camera you take a picture with. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to put them up here. Oh, maybe that's...
Interesting. One is indoor and one's outdoor, so you already see the difference in the lighting.
Okay. So can you see both of those on there?
Right now, I just see one.
Okay, just one?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to zoom in a little bit here. See if we can get some good... stuff here. Okay. So it is a little bit hard to tell because we've got some glare there in some areas, but you have a lymphatic iris, which is the blue type iris. You probably already knew that.
I didn't know it was lymphatic, but here we go.
Okay. Yeah. So with that, I didn't mention this earlier, but with the different types of irises, you're going to have different sets of predispositions.
Okay.
So for people with lymphatic or blue irises, they're going to be more predisposed to having acidity problems, over-acidity problems, lymphatic congestion issues, kidney congestion issues, arthritic and rheumatic type issues. Those are just the kind of things that people will be predisposed to.
Okay.
Just to give your listeners some additional information in case they have brown eyes and they're like, well, what about me? What am I predisposed to? The people who have the hematogenic or the true brown, dark brown irises, they're going to be more predisposed to things like arterial sclerosis, intestinal digestive issues, liver and gallbladder congestion, blood iron issues, things like that. Mm-hmm. People with the lighter brown iris, the biliary iris, they're going to be predisposed to pancreatic insufficiencies, liver and gallbladder congestion, and also intestinal immune issues as well. So those are kind of the basic predispositions. Okay. Now, since you have the lymphatic iris, that may be the case as well for you, that you have those lymphatic predispositions. I do see around here that it appears that there may be some lymphatic tophi, those little...
Like the lighter spots you're talking about?
Yeah, these little white clouds down here.
Okay. See those? Yeah.
Yeah. So that means you may be predisposed to lymphatic congestion.
Okay.
Overall, you have a pretty good, strong constitution. Your iris fibers are pretty close together in most areas.
Yeah, I remember there was a picture you sent me as an example of one that would work. And the fibers were, I zoomed in, I was like, man, there's a lot of space. Like it would look like this spider web. I couldn't believe how much space was in the eye. So you're saying mine's tighter? And that typically is better. Okay, carry on.
Yeah. So we also have, I'm trying to find which picture is better here. This is a little bit better to see the collarette. Do you see this right here?
It's like the little, it almost squiggly, looks like streamers. Yeah, that are.
A little squiggly line that
kind
of tracks the pupil.
Uh-huh.
So that, everybody has a collarette.
Mm-hmm.
And that is more unique to you than your fingerprints are.
Interesting. Okay.
Everybody's is very unique. And so everything from that collarette to the pupil is the GI tract.
Okay.
And so
I can see kind of a difference in color from where that, I guess I'm thinking the ribbons or the streamers around the center.
So this over here is the small intestine. This is your right iris. So this is the small intestine. This is the cecum part of the colon.
Okay.
And this is your ascending colon and transverse colon.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Tell me more.
Now, if we had some pictures on my camera, we might be able to tell a little bit better. But immediately around the pupil, there might be, do you see how it's pretty dark right in there?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Right there. And then it's lighter around here.
Okay, so for the listener on the top left, I guess it'd be the top right of my right eye.
Immediately surrounding the pupil, there's like this dark ring.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit darker gray. And then immediately around that, there is a lighter gray ring.
Mm-hmm.
What that often indicates is that there is potentially under acidity in the stomach. And you know, your stomach should be pretty acidic to help break down your food.
Uh-huh.
But then also that lighter gray ring may indicate that the rest of the digestive tract, the small intestine, the colon, may be a little bit over acidic.
Huh. Okay. And what is a reasonable, like when, if you find that, what does somebody take away from that as a practical, tactical thing they could work on? Obviously there's a lot, but is there like a primary, these are most likely to be the things that are make a big difference?
Working on emotionally, an under acidic stomach often, indicates feeling unworthy to receive things. So working on being okay with receiving. I mean, that's something that I struggle with. I don't like people to help me out. I want to do it all myself, right?
Yeah, nobody likes to feel needy. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then also working on raising the acidity. And there's all kinds of things you can do for that. My preference is to, rather than give the stomach acidity, is help the stomach produce it on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So things like celery juice, apple cider vinegar, cayenne pepper, salt, real salt. I'm talking about like Redmond real salt or Celtic salt.
Yep.
Those kinds of things can help raise the acidity in your stomach. And that's kind of the foundation. You help raise the acidity in your stomach, and that's going to also help to lower the acidity in the rest of the digestive tract too.
Okay. Fascinating. Okay.
Any more other things? Yeah, let's get into a little bit more here. Right here, there's a genetic weakness inside. This is going to be pretty close to the ileocecal valve right there.
Tell people what that valve is.
So it's basically the valve between your small intestine and your large intestine that opens and closes to allow food and waste to move into the large intestine.
Okay.
Now, this area of tissue is going to be genetically weak, and so it may have the propensity to develop a pocket or pockets inside the colon walls.
Okay.
There is also another one right here in the small intestine.
Yeah, I would have just looked at that as a space, but it doesn't seem to match the width of some of the other ones you're looking at.
Yeah. And it'd be, again, this would be better if we had some lateral lighting, like a flash right there. Mm-hmm. But obviously for a phone camera, this is actually pretty good. So those are just areas of genetic tissue weakness inside the colon.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, the collarette, it appears to come right up here. And it looks like the collarette may go up here pretty close.
So that, well, he's talking about that ribbon that it kind of looks symmetrical, almost like there's the center of the flower and then the petals that form symmetry. And it's like there's one section near the bottom where it's not quite symmetrical. It kind of comes all the way in rather than matching the rest. Okay. And what would that?
Almost like a petal got ripped off or something. Yeah. And it looks like it kind of just goes in.
Mm-hmm.
That would indicate genetically it's going to be pretty tight through the cecum part of the colon right there.
Hmm.
And the cecum is the beginning of your colon. So it may be tough for waste to move through that area.
Okay.
Potentially.
So my takeaway so far is being more intentional with gut health is something that would be just because of predisposition. It seems like that's going to be something I want to pay attention to more or less indefinitely.
Yes, absolutely. Now, moving into the outside of the GI tract,
mm-hmm.
here we have a few genetic weaknesses right at about 6 o'clock. These look like little openings in the iris fibers. So they kind of look dark gray or black in the picture that we're looking at. But there's two of them on either side of the 6 o'clock line. Mm-hmm. And these are actually going to run through the adrenal area.
That I was expecting.
So stress, sleep, they might have some challenges there.
Yeah.
This one on the right side is going to run through the adrenals and into the kidneys. And then there's one right at 6 o'clock,
underneath
a little
it.
Bit further down, and that's in the kidney as well.
Okay. Yeah, I can certainly say, six kids and a 7-month-old in the house is adds some stress. And there's
a lot of stress.
Yep. But does that seem more genetic though? Like a predisposition or is that more something that would be a result of recency?
These are genetic.
Okay.
So you're going to be more prone to those things. Like I mentioned with whenever stress comes into play, those are the areas that are going to feel it more than others. So you got to be making sure that you're supporting your adrenals, your kidneys.
Yeah.
And you probably know how to do all those things anyway. So
no, but it's good.
You probably
feedback.
Do all those things anyway. Well,
that this is predisposition type things. It's helpful because it says, okay, this isn't, I got the body I got and I need to do the best I can with it. And so let me shore up what tends to be, or it seems to be an area where my body would have a harder time than the next person. And I can have, there's a proactive nature I can take with this information too. I love it.
Yeah. And then over here, it's not quite like these genetic weaknesses. This is at about between 7 and 8 o'clock, maybe about 7:30. Right here, there's a little bit of tissue that's a little bit weaker. So in this area, you see how they're as dense?
Right
there and right there. That's going to be in the liver and gallbladder areas.
Okay. Yes, it really is an organ like viscera is where I tend, it looks like I have most of my challenges.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm here at about 12 o'clock, between 11 and 1, actually. Mm-hmm. That's the brain area.
Mm-hmm.
It's really dense in there. So you've got a good, strong brain. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't quite tell because of, let's look at the other one, actually. This one.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, you can see it a little bit better.
Reflection. But yeah, okay. But you're saying that cognition is typically not going to be my predisposition weakness.
Yeah,
it's more gut,
that's
GI.
Your strength.
Okay. Well, good to hear.
Your strength is the brain. Yeah.
Oh, how about that? Okay.
You're a very smart guy. I can tell just by your eyes.
Tell me more, George. Keep it coming. I love this part.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Anything else that stands out about those pictures?
That's about all I can see. There may be some pigmentation right here.
Okay.
I can't quite tell.
Hard to see. That's the part where the camera reflection is in my eye. So you're seeing a shadow of the camera.
So there may be some brown or red right in there.
Okay. And what would
brown,
that
it's going to be, and you might be able to just go look in the mirror on your right eye and say, okay, what color is that?
Yeah.
If there is something there.
Okay.
I don't know if this is a, let's look on the other one. Well, that might just be a genetic marker.
Okay. Cause
there.
It looks darker on this other photo.
Yeah.
So what is that? Cause so kind of a 9-10 o'clock is where he's looking at relative to eye. Where, what is that telling you?
So if there were a pigment there, if it's brown, it's going to be liver indicated, maybe some liver gallbladder congestion. Mm-hmm. If it's reddish, that's going to be pancreatic enzyme related.
Mm-hmm.
On this picture, it doesn't look like there is a pigment there, though.
Yeah.
This other one that I'm looking at, it may be another stricture, though. I can't quite tell. So you might have to go in the mirror and look. If it comes in at about 9:15, 9:30, 9 o'clock, if it comes in towards the pupil, that's going to be a stricture in the ascending colon.
GI, though. Yeah.
Yeah. If the pigment is inside that collarette to the pupil, if there is a pigment there, that's going to be a little more serious whenever we find a pigment inside the collarette to the pupil.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little more serious. And so making sure you support your colon the right ways, eat lots of fiber, clean it out periodically.
Yeah.
That's the best way to support your gut health.
Fantastic.
With those kind of things. Yeah.
Thanks for letting me be your guinea pig and learn more about this personally. So,
yeah, listeners get to learn more about you. That's
right. Maybe they didn't want to know that I have a genetic predisposition to take better care of my gut and colon, et cetera. But here we go. Now you know, people.
And that's the thing with predispositions. You know, you can take care of yourself really well and not have any issues in these areas. I've met with people who do a lot for their health, and I tell them things. I'm like, you have a predisposition to that and this. And they're like, oh, well, I'm already doing this and I'm already doing that. And I go, great. You're on the right track.
Yeah. So keep at it. Okay, cool. Yeah. So you said you had some pictures of yourself or your own eyes.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything dramatically different that would be worthy of showing the listener or the viewer here that could give them another
window? Let me show you some pigments, what they look like. So I'm going to stop sharing that for a minute and I'll pull up my other picture here. All right, there's that. I'm gonna share this. Okay, here we go. All right, so this is my left
totally
iris. You can see a lot there.
I'm not sure if I talked over you. You said it's your left iris?
Yeah, this is my left iris.
Okay.
My left iris isn't quite as strong as my right one, but you can see there's the iris fibers here.
Mm-hmm.
There's my collarette, pupil, and at about 12, just off of, not 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, maybe about 6:15, 6:10, I've got this liver pigment.
Wow, that is a very different color.
Yeah.
And what does that tell you? So liver is just like, it's
this is a liver. This is a liver pigment on the adrenal area. So for me, that means my liver experienced some congestion, stagnation. It also indicates anger and resentment and fear towards primary feminine figures.
Interesting. Does that resonate? Is that like,
in some ways, yes. And in other ways, no. I mean, I have a great relationship with my mom. A great relationship with my wife, but from time to time, I'll get angry about things and I'll have some resentment issues that I have to work through. I'm kind of predisposed to that because of this. Also some fear. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, I was terrified of girls. Like I would have all these girls who would have a crush on me and I would be afraid of them. Like I didn't know how to talk to them, things like that. I didn't, you know, I just was one of my weaknesses. And now I kind of know why I had this fear. So anyway, there's that. There's this. It's a little more yellow. Going to be kidney related. Let me go to my right eye now.
Oh, wow. That is different.
I've got some. This one is actually pretty serious. This is pancreatic pigmentation. And the pancreas area right here. And that is what we call a topostabile pigment. It's a type of pigment in the area of what type it is. So it's a pancreas pigment in the pancreas area. Additionally, I have a primary blood vessel. This is about, for your listeners, it's about 130.
What he's talking about is that the white of the, I was going to ask you, like, because we've been focused on the pupil, but the white of the eye also gives you information. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
So he's talking about the white of your eye is called your sclera. And whenever you have a really thick blood vessel, we call those primary blood vessels. And they will often point to areas that are more challenged. And so I have this primary blood vessel pointing to that pigment in the pancreas area. So that's a little more serious. My dad's a type 1 diabetic. So it kind of makes sense. I was predisposed to that. And I ate really, really poorly in college. Lots of processed foods. And those are the worst kinds of foods for your pancreas. So I've been working for a while to clean that up. And it's going pretty well, I would say.
Nice. How recent is this photo?
This is a couple years old.
Okay.
Here in the sclera, these little blood vessels, if you can't see, there's lots of little small blood vessels going in different directions. Those are more local inflammation in the body, things like that. I have one of the biggest questions I get is, will my eyes change? Like if I do a lot of cleansing things, will my eyes change? Will these pigments go away? Yes, they can. In my experience, they don't. But it kind of depends on the person. A lot of it also depends on how much change that you create to heal your body, because these pigments often take years to develop. Sometimes they can develop really quickly, but most of the time they take years to deposit on the iris. And so it's not like you're going to do a cleansing program for 3 months and then it's going to go away.
It could take time.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle. That's the key.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know how bad my eyes were before this, because I had done a lot prior to taking these pictures. These are the first pictures that I have. But with my children, I've taken pictures of their eyes really young, so we can see and track the changes that happen in their eyes.
I like it. Tell us about for the viewer, they probably noticed the top left or the 11:10-ish o'clock. You've got a big different color there. What's going on there?
This kind of seems like a sectoral heterochromia, where a whole section of the iris is colored here. It's a little bit orange, a little bit yellow. And then it extends into the GI tract in the transverse colon area. Now, like I mentioned, pigments in the GI tract are a little more serious.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got gut health that I got to work on too. So it's not just you.
Thank you.
Of us, actually.
Welcome, brother.
Yeah. So I'm right there. So this is orange. This is going to be pancreas related as well. So yeah, digestive is a big thing that I focus on for myself.
Yeah.
And helping to make sure that my blood sugar is regulated well. That's mm-hmm. another big one.
Yeah.
I don't do doctors, and that's my choice for my family. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I have diabetes. I didn't last time I went to the doctor, which was 7 years ago,
mm-hmm.
or so, 7-8 years ago. But yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that's,
cool.
That's what all right. this all indicates.
No, thanks for the tour here. It's been fun to have a couple of different examples, and yeah, our eyes do look different. And so, imagine for the listener, they're intrigued to say, what in the world might my eyes tell me about myself? So
yeah,
very cool. Anything else you want to comment on there?
Yeah, just to make another mention of the sclera, there are other signs that we can find in the sclera. Sometimes there will be pigments,
mm-hmm.
Like a brown pigment. Sometimes that happens. It's not too common.
Uh-huh.
Other times we'll find this kind of yellowish substance toward the medial side of the iris. So on your right eye, that's going to be towards the right side. On your left eye, that's going to be towards the left side. Well, when you're looking at it like this, it's going to be towards your nose.
Yeah, medial means middle, if you want to think of it that way.
And there will be like this yellowish, whitish, creamish substance just to the medial side of your iris.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we call a pinguicula. That's the funnest word to say in iridology. But that's an indication of some liver gallbladder congestion.
Okay.
The other thing I wanted to mention is the pupil as well. The pupil can indicate certain things if it's too dilated or too constricted.
Hmm.
So for example, with a picture like this, I have really good lighting. I've got a focusing light, and then I've got a flash coming from the lateral side. And sometimes people's eyes will still be dilated with that amount of light.
Hmm.
And so what that often can indicate are some blood sugar regulation challenges and potentially feeling really overwhelmed. They may have some adrenal issues, things like that.
Got it.
If it's too constricted,
uh-huh.
that often means that a person is really just trying to hold everything in. They don't want to let anything out. And
control issue. Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yep.
Or, yeah, constipated or control.
Yep.
Yeah.
So those are some other things with the iris. I mean, the pupil is not the iris, but it's related.
Mm-hmm.
And with all of these things, you'll notice that I'm not very specific in the way I talk about these things. Like with, you know, I'm talking about the pancreas pigmentation, and I say I may have a blood sugar challenge. Because
mm-hmm.
we don't want to step into the medical arena and get into diagnosing and things like that. So we use a little bit different terminology in case you're wondering here.
Yeah, but it could corroborate other just intuitions, experiences, diagnoses. It's a great window into, just for me, even just having you take a hip shot at my photos that are less quality than yours to affirm, yeah, no, GI, that would be my weakness. And other things seem to be okay. So very appreciative.
Yeah. It's what you said about corroborating. I do have a good story about that. I had a client come into me who wanted me to look at his eyes. And he had this sign on the cornea. So for those of you who don't know, the cornea covers the pupil. And it appeared along the edge of the iris, but it's actually a deposit on the cornea.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this haziness that you see along the very edge of a person's iris here.
Okay.
And he had that sign, and it was very apparent. And what we call that, it's called a corneal arcus. And what that is an indication of is possible lipid deposits, inorganic salt buildup inside of the arteries. And I said to this person, hey, you know, has your doctor told you anything about your heart health? Does he have any concerns? And he said, no, my doctor says my heart's great. There's no issues. And I said, I don't buy it. I don't know about that. At least from what your eyes are telling me, you know, I could be wrong, but I would say to go meet with a cardiologist. That might be a good idea. And so he actually had an appointment with his cardiologist set up for a few weeks after our appointment. So we went to that appointment and he came back and he said that the cardiologist had said that he had an 80% blockage in one of his main arteries.
Oh, wow. And you could see that where the other, whatever diagnostic he had, just completely missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that there was a problem big enough that he needed to take some action.
Wow.
Really drastic action. And it just, I mean, the cardiologist said the same thing.
Yeah. So would you see, so I'm thinking more specific here, like inflammation is kind of general, but do you see inflammation in the eyes? Do you see something like parasitic or infections? Do you see something like metal toxicity or any of those things that you would notice in the eyes?
Those are some of the things that we can't see, actually. We can't see parasites, can't see, well, we can't see heavy metals by name.
Mm-hmm.
Things like this, though, do you see these little pigments? This is at about 6 o'clock, a little bit more than 6 o'clock, 6:15, 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
These little pigments, they're really dark gray.
Yeah.
Those may be heavy metals and toxins in my GI tract.
Okay. Yeah. But and you know, because it's inside the, I'll call it the flower petals there, you'd see
this
that.
Is going to be right near the appendix. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Just so it's one other way to peek into your body, people. And it's no blood test required, no needles, no.
Yeah. Non-invasive.
Right. Just you need a good photo and somebody
who
knows what they're doing. So.
And cool. You can do this. You can do iridology with a light and a lens.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of how I started out.
Okay.
And that's pretty effective too. That's what most people did for years and years and years. I mean, Hippocrates used iridology and he would just use the sun, you know, looking into the person's iris. And so that's a great way as well.
Cool. Well, so if somebody's hearing this and they're thinking, gosh, I want to get into that. I know you've got a free 7-part email series you do, which kind of gives them some of the background history of it, but you also have a course people can take. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So I developed this course called the At Home Iridology Course to help parents and caretakers use iridology in their homes, because that's really why I got started in this. I wanted to know how to help my family members when they were dealing with things that we couldn't figure out. And so I developed this course that kind of gives you all of the tools and all of the information that you need to make a good evaluation of those in your home so that you can start taking care of more things in your home. Because I think the way that society is going, we kind of need to have more things that we can do on our own and be outside the system and be more self-sufficient. And so that was kind of the idea behind this course.
Love it. Okay. Well, so as we start to wrap up a little bit, tell people, I guess, anything more about where they can find you and your work, where they find this course, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, you can find me at our website, healthsaves.org, and you can go and sign up for our free email course on there about iridology, or check out our at-home iridology course just on the website there. You can also find me on Instagram. I'm not too active on Instagram, but I do post occasionally. I think it's just jordan.gunderson on Instagram, and that's S-E-N.
Okay, cool. And then you have different packages, I noticed, like different, seems like different depths you get into related to how much work you do with iridology. Tell people about that.
Yeah. So with iridology, there's a few different things that we can do. I often will do a live iris analysis, and I really like to have pictures, so I don't use a light and a lens anymore. So we'll take a picture of your eye, we'll have you sit down, and I'll just go through things with you like we did here today. Unfortunately, these all have to be in person because, like we just saw, it's a little bit difficult to really get all the info from the iris just on a picture from a phone or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also do a full report, which is a 75-page write-up of every system in your body. So your detox systems, like your liver, your kidneys, and then channels of elimination, like your lungs, your bowels, urinary system, and then all the other major systems like the brain, the endocrine system, various structures, immune system, things like that. And then we talk about that for about an hour later.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also do a mini report, which is kind of a mix between the two. Those are for people who don't really know much. They just want to learn more, and they're not really interested in really getting serious about their health, but they just want some cool information.
Cool. Well, Jordan, this has been highly insightful, and I'm super intrigued to know more. And my wife is already like, I want to know what to do for my, I don't know what's going on in my body. So yeah, thank you so much for the time today. I appreciate you carving it out and just educating us and giving people one other option outside the medical system to just learn more about their body and be proactive as a steward of their own body. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet, Christian. Thanks for having me on. I always enjoy chatting with you, and I hope your listeners got some good information from our discussion here.
Oh, no doubt they did. All right. We'll talk to you soon, Jordan.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks for listening to the Deconstructing Conventional podcast. If you could use a coach in your corner, check out our membership offerings and personal coaching options at truewholehuman.com. To stay current with our latest episodes and offerings, subscribe to our newsletter. And if you want to keep the conversation going or suggest a guest or podcast topic, visit us on our free speech-friendly social channel, truewholehuman.social. I'll see you in the next episode.